Mike, obviously, give me a thought. Did you not see the puck? What happened?
I can laugh now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't think there's been a time in my career where I've lost a puck where I have no idea where it went. And talking to some guys after, I wasn't the only one that didn't know where it was either, so it made me feel a little bit better.
Listen, happens to the best of us. I called myself Julia DeStefano off the top of the show, and Mike Smith let in a goal from 132 feet out. But they came out successful in the Battle of Alberta last night, and now they have a 3-1 lead over the Calgary Flames. To keep breaking it down, we've got Jason Greger from our sister station out in Edmonton at TSN 1260, host of the Jason Greger Show. Jason, we'll start with that because they came out on top and we can get to the positives after. What was your immediate reaction? When you look at it after, you can kind of tell that he totally lost sight of the puck, but your immediate reaction to that crazy goal?
Well, honestly, I didn't really understand it from my vantage point where I was watching the game. You're at center ice, and so you don't see the behind-the-net vantage point. And I was just like, how did he whiff on that? Like, I thought he lost it in the light, to be honest. I thought it was, I was like, geez, maybe that was higher than I thought it was. And, he was an outfielder in baseball because he clearly didn't see it. And when you see the good camera angle was the shot from right behind the net. And clearly, he moves after the puck goes by him. It's like he hears it. Done, and by then it's obviously too late. And at the moment, obviously Oilers fans weren't happy. He kind of evened it up. Markstrom had gifted the Oilers a goal 22 seconds into the game, and Smith just added a little drama for them. But the Oilers, I'll give them credit, that goal could have sunk them very easily. And I think honestly, guys, in years past, I think it might have. But the Oilers are—they're a more experienced team, and it seems like the players were saying all the right things on the bench, according to Nugent Hopkins and then their head coach. And that—and if you look at their play, really after that goal, they had been in a pretty passive mode. They had three shots in the first 13 minutes of the third, and weren't doing much. And then after the goal, they had seven shots in the final 7 minutes, including the game winner from Nugent Hopkins, and then Kane into an empty net. And, a huge win for the Oilers, a huge win that could have been disastrous, but they found a way to not let the adversity get to them.
Yeah, I was impressed by how they kept their composure and then, went out there and just got the goal back, right? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins ends up scoring the game winner, and they got their back, their guy Mike Smith's back. And, are you sensing a newfound confidence in this team, and is that why they were able to keep that composure and get it done at the end of the day?
Well, I think confidence also comes from knowing you have a better team. Like, the Oilers have more talent on this team than they've had in the previous two playoffs years. Evander Kane, Zach Hyman, you throw in Kulak and Keith and CeCe. They got more experience on the back end. And they just have more depth. They're a better team. So I think when you know you're a better team, it's kind of easier to have confidence and belief that you can do it. And then obviously when you've got McDavid and Draisaitl doing what they're doing, Draisaitl is the first player in NHL history to have four consecutive games of three or more points. And he's barely being talked about, which is kind of funny. He always gets overlooked. No. I find it rather comical from people on the outside. Draisaitl is a really good player, and he's injured. He's been playing through a high ankle sprain, and he's doing that. So, this team's confidence, I think, stems from, number one, the structure that Jay Woodcroft put in. I think they've talked a lot about when things don't go well, get back to your foundation, and they believe in it. So I think that helps, but they've also got the talent to come back and score a goal.
Yeah, that reminded me, we were reading through the Steve Dryden piece from TSN.ca yesterday that was entitled, what do I want to say, clickbaity, but I don't want to call it that, but it was like the most enticing title ever, McDavid undoubtedly the best player ever. And in that, Steve points specifically to the will of Crosby and how that's a new thing that Connor McDavid has kind of acquired or maybe kind of adapted to in the postseason that's really set him apart from all the other players. I know you just said Leon is a bit overlooked, but I'm going to have you sing Connor McDavid's praises because you just got it. He's unlocked a new level. What do you think of that comment about how he has this newfound will?
Well, I think it's valid in the sense because, but it almost makes you say, well, he didn't have will before. And so I don't want to say that. I think it's a heightened determination, right? And, his play in all areas of the ice. Like, he attacks all the time now, and he attacks from different angles. I think he used to really just like to go wide, and his speed, he was so used to beating everybody. But now, you know, he's inherited a little of a Patrick Kane, where he'll swoop high in the offensive zone, and no one can skate with him across the blue line, right? There's no one that's fast enough, really. And so he creates separation that way, and then he attacks through the middle again. And so, and now he's incorporated that spin move, which he's used before, but it's like the Denny Savard spinorama times 10, because he just does it so much quicker, and he can beat guys even when defensemen have the right positioning on him. McDavid is just so quick, and he turns, and all of a sudden he gets by the guys. From even times when guys are playing properly below the puck, which is what they shouldn't, and just coaches talk about it all the time, be below the puck in the defensive zone, and they are, and then McDavid just spins off quickly, and the coach, what the hell am I supposed to do now?
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's not much you can do. So we haven't seen a player in the NHL, and part of that's technology for sure, but no one's ever played the game as fast as McDavid has. Right, they just haven't, and so it's exciting, right? I thought someone compared him to kind of Michael Jordan when Michael Jordan changed the NBA and how he was, and McDavid is now doing that. He's such a gifted skater, and then you put in now his determination factor with his skill and his ability to not only skate fast, but he can make and think plays at that speed, and that's what's so impressive about it.
Well, I was watching last night, and it seemed like they were like boxing one on Connor McDavid. Like, there was just four guys on McDavid, and somehow he's still able to make a play and get the puck over to Evander Kane to score a goal and just make those plays. It's unbelievable what we're seeing this guy do. But it seems like over the last little bit, I mean, there was that comment from Matt Tkachuk a couple of days ago saying, we got to stop this one guy. I don't know if they stopped him last night, but they didn't allow him to go out and you know, look beast mode. But they still ended up taking the L because everyone else around him is stepping up. How much of that do you think is just the fact that they have, you know, really good players in Nugent Hopkins and Hyman and Vander Kane? But how much of it is these guys watching what Connor McDavid is doing and saying, man, if this guy's putting his body on the line like that, like, we got to do it too. And everyone else just stepping up around him.
Well, Mark Messier in the glory days of the Oilers, you know, talked about how Wayne Gretzky made them all better because of his practice habits. And just, you know, he was ruthless in games. If he had 3 points, he wanted four, even if it was a blowout. Like, he played every shift like that. And the other guys obviously had their skill, but he raised everybody's play. And I think that McDavid has done that. Like, obviously, Leon Draisaitl, like, Draisaitl's won every award that McDavid's won, right? Like, Draisaitl's mm-hmm. pretty darn good. So, you know, and he's really determined. But I think, you know, those two lift everybody. And you see Draisaitl, who's been playing through injuries, and, you know, guys are like, well, I got no excuse not to give my best. So I do think when your best player is doing everything, like a Sidney Crosby, either you do it or you don't stick around, right? I think it's that simple. The good teams will eventually get rid of the guys. Crosby, they know who's not giving their best, right? Like, you're obviously not going to be able to match the skill level of McDavid on the team, right? Nugent Hopkins isn't going to be that. It's not close. But when the opportunity arises, you got to step up. And I do think, like, it was interesting to me that Rasmus Anderson and Tkachuk, they're all one guy's beating us. I honestly think that showed how McDavid was in their head more than anything else. Because, yeah, you know, Evander Kane had just scored a hat trick, right? Evander Kane's got 12 goals in the playoffs in 11 games, right? He's got, what, he's got 6 or 7 goals in 4 games in the series against the Flames. You know, Duncan Keith had a 3-point game. You know, Evan Bouchard has 2 goals in 4 games. Nugent Hopkins now has 2. Zach Hyman scored in every game except one. So it is definitely more than one guy. And I think, Calgary, you're right. Like, last night, it's funny. McDavid set the bar so high that he gets 2 points, and we're like, yeah, but he didn't really have a big game.
Underwhelming.
Like, yeah, but it's true, because in the other games, like, every shift he was doing something, he was spinning and twisting, and people are like, oh, my goodness, he's a highlight reel. And last night, I think Calgary did a better job of containing him. But then when they look, they're like, yeah, guys, we did a good job against that first line. But, oh, yeah, they still scored combined 7 points, right? Like, that's
yeah,
that's what's tough right now. Like, that first line, and it's kind of by luck, because if Draisaitl doesn't get injured in game 6 against L.A., I'm not sold that they throw them together, because they don't have to. Draisaitl can run his own line. That's been proven, right? When he won the Hart, he was on his own line. So,
right.
I think that the injury, in a weird way, has actually benefited Edmonton, because they load up that line, and right now the Draisaitl is getting healthier. Like, they're unstoppable. Calgary's top line was the best line goals for and against in the regular season. And they're getting crushed by Edmonton right now. They can't match Edmonton's top line because Edmonton's top line wasn't together in the regular season, right? And that's what's so unique about the playoffs is in a short series and window, if you get a matchup that benefits you, it's really hard to overcome. And right now, Calgary's top line just simply can't match Edmonton's top line.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of credit obviously goes to McDavid and Draisaitl, but you mentioned it. Evander Kane's got 12 goals in the playoffs, leading all NHLers. I mean, why has he fit in so well with this team, Gregor? And like, when you look forward, I know he's a pending UFA, but like, how hard should the Oilers be pushing to try and keep this guy around next year?
Well, Kane, it's kind of a twofold answer with Kane because you can't ignore the past off-ice concerns. The on-ice concern, like, I watched the San Jose Sharks very closely because of my nephew. So I watched Kane. He was their best player last year. It really wasn't close, right? He led their team in scoring. Anytime you lead your team in scoring and, you know, you're not blessed with a ton of talent around you, you're a pretty good player, right? But when you get put now, and Kane's a finisher, and Kane's actually quite a cerebral player. He's very smart. If you watch him, and, you know, Jay Woodcroft talked about it, he goes, I didn't know a lot about Evander, but he competes really hard. But he's very smart. He doesn't cheat very often for points, right? He's not one of those offensive guys. Every now and then guys cheat a little bit. It's human nature. You have to. But he's not a guy that's the kind of just a benefactor of lucky plays. He'll work for it. He's very strong. He's a good skater. And he's a finisher. And he's ultra confident in himself. Like, he doesn't lack confidence, I'll say that. So now you put him in positions with McDavid where when the puck's on his stick in good scoring lane, he's got a better chance to finish than other guys that have played with McDavid, right? Like, it's not a comparison between Kane and Yesipul Jarvi on the ability to finish. It's night and day, right? So I think, like, Kane's a twofold question here because what happens with the arbitrator? If he gets half his money, let's say, and yeah. I'm using half because that's what Mike Richards got. So let's say he gets half. So that's $3.5 million. Well, if Edmonton offers him $5 million, he's actually now going to make $8.5 million for the next 3 years, and he was only scheduled to make $7 before he got his contract terminated. So he's actually could make more money, even though in theory his contract with Edmonton is less, right? So it all depends. Like, if I'm Evander Kane, I look and say, hey, I have an opportunity to play in Edmonton with Connor McDavid, right? Because it's most likely he'll play in his line for the next 3 years. Now the difference would be if he gets nothing from the arbitrator, then I think Evander Kane, because of his finances, will be like, well, I got to go to the highest bidder. And I completely understand that, right? If someone's going to offer him the most, he'll probably go there, right? Unless it's maybe a difference of 250 or something, right? But I think Kane has to understand in a cap world, like, I just don't see how they can give him $7 million in Edmonton. And if he gets anything from the arbitrator, they don't need to because he's getting $3.5 million, right? So it won't just be about the money. It should be about opportunity. And if he wants to win, there's no better place for him than Edmonton, right? Like, the only, you know, you could go play with Austin Matthews, right, in Toronto, but they don't need a forward, right? Like, I think everybody in Toronto knows they need defensemen, right? Although they could use a power forward.
They definitely can't afford him if the Oilers can't afford him.
You know, so the teams that can afford him, like big $7 million, aren't teams that are likely going to be competing for the Cup. So you can take the money, or you can take the opportunity, and there's no guarantee you'll win a cup anywhere you go. But you want to at least be in the conversation, right? So I think a lot of the Kane situation will be dictated by what happens with that arbitration ruling.
Yeah, interesting, pretty unique situation with Evander Kane. Okay, Oilers scoring by committee, top players playing amazing, they're getting depth scoring as well. But this could all look very different, and this is not discrediting the Oilers at all. If Markstrom was playing to his abilities. If anyone had told you before this series that Mike Smith would outplay Markstrom, what would you have said to them?
Well, it's funny because I told people, if you looked at Smith's playoff history, he's actually been a really good playoff goalie. The thing about Mike Smith, when he makes a mistake, it's really glaring and people get so focused on the one obvious error, right? Like, you know, or if Smith has a bad night, it's really bad. But if you look at his overall playoff numbers, he came in to start the series, the second best save percentage amongst goalies who played 30 games in NHL history. Only Tim Thomas was better. And the thing about Markstrom that's funny, if you go back and look at game one, he didn't have a great game, but the Oilers were terrible and they won 9-6, right? Calgary did. But if you go back and watch the goals in game two and game three, you've got, so Zach Hyman scores shorthanded, bar down. Leon Draisaitl scores in a breakaway, posting in. Evan Bouchard is able to walk into the top of the circle, and he's got a heavy shot. He just crushes it by him. McDavid dekes him out of his shorts. None of those goals were bad in game two, and even in game three. right? Like Markstrom in game three, it was 20-7, the shot. Markstrom kept the Flames in the game, and then Oilers took it over. Now, he did make the huge gaffe yesterday on the first goal, and the Canes goal now clearly was deflected, but from where it was shot, you're like, geez, maybe save that. Like, if I look at the amount of goals Edmonton scored in the last three games that they've all won, obviously the Nugent Hopkins goal, that's on Markstrom. It's just a gaffe, but it's not a save gaffe. It's a puck handling gaffe. Actually, funny, I don't think he's played that awful because people will just look at saves. But if you go back and look at the goals, Edmonton just scored a lot of really nice goals. Like Evander Kane had two breakaways, right? Mm-hmm. And one, you know, he's coming, and Kane didn't do what a lot of shooters do, where they take that pass from McDavid and they just redirect it. He held it, went back against the grain because Markstrom had to move across. Well, now Markstrom can't move the other way. It's impossible, right? And he holds on, goes to his backhand, pretty much an empty net. So it's funny. I think Markstrom, if you look at goals against and save percentage, it'll be terrible.
Right.
But Edmonton has just scored some really high-level skill goals. And some this year in the NHL, and I really believe that because the focus on skills coaches in the offseason in the NHL the last few years, and a lot of the best players have them, we're catching up to the goal. For years, it was all the goalies had a goalie coach. Oh, look, we have no goals. Well, yeah, no belief we have no goals because you're focusing on that. And coach is like, hey, when you guys get in the offensive zone, just do what you want. Well, that's kind of dumb. And finally, we're catching up. And I think the Oilers have just scored some really nice skilled goals rather than Markstrom being terrible. Obviously, they'll look and say, hey, you should be better than a 40-year-old goalie. But sometimes ageism isn't necessarily the best defense. Like Mike Smith has played pretty well in this series. You know, obviously game one, he wasn't great to start, but neither was Markstrom. But since then, you know, Mike Smith, when called upon, other than Rasmus Anderson, 132-footer, he's been pretty good.
He's been good enough to get the wins, and that's ultimately all you have to do is save more pucks than the guy on the other side of the ice. In conversation with Darren Dreger from TSN 1260 out in Edmonton, the host of the Jason Dreger Show. Game five now going tomorrow night, and you know that the Flames are going to be looking to stave off elimination. Got to be expecting some sort of pushback from them tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. Game four, when you're the road team, you know, it's extremely difficult to win. So Calgary's going to give you their best effort. You know, historically, the odds now are very much in Edmonton's favor to win this series, right? 91% of the series, when you lead 3-1, you win. Now, the Pittsburgh Penguins would be the one of the 9% who didn't win, and that happened earlier this year. So, yeah, I expect Calgary to give their best. The Oilers, though, they'll be highly motivated because you win this game, you get some more rest, right? Darnell Nurse is banged up. Any type of rest at this time of year can be crucial. The defending two-time champs are sitting at home drinking pina coladas, probably non-alcoholic ones, as they wait to see who they face. So Edmonton, Calgary's going to be desperate, sure. But Edmonton's got to, I think, withstand the first 10, 15 minutes, and then you try to win that game because then you're going to get an extended break before you face most likely Colorado.
What's the vibe like out in Calgary right now? We were talking about this just ahead of the show and how we have some like serious playoff envy right now, watching, getting to talk about hockey and like the actual on-ice product and what's going on in Edmonton. And Jamie McLennan, he was over there for Game 3 in Edmonton, and he said he never heard the building that loud. And I remember the We Want the Cup chants after they had won the first game in the Kings series in Edmonton. I think it was the first win in like 8 years or something like that in the home barn with the fans in the stands. Like, what's the atmosphere like in the city after taking that 3-1 series lead?
Well, there hasn't been a Battle of Alberta in 31 years, right? And so I think Maple Leafs fans can really connect to Ottawa and Toronto in the early 2000s. Those were great series, right? Yeah. And obviously they're better for Toronto because they won most of them, right? But it was still, you know, there's lots of emotion back and forth. It just adds to it. And you know, there's multiple generations of fans who have never seen a Battle of Alberta. If you're under the age of 40, you have no recollection of 1991. None. So, you know, I guess maybe if you're like some super high hockey fan at the age of 8, but for the most part, they hadn't seen it. So that, I think, fuels it for sure. There's the brilliance of McDavid that makes fans be like, geez, we got a shot, right? And then there's Leon Draisaitl, and, you know, a lot of their new guys, Zach Hyman has become such a huge fan favorite because of his relentless work ethic, just relentless in the playoffs. Like, you see him, you know, scoring big goals, and he's dogged all over the puck. So, you know, blue-collar town really respects him. So, yeah, they're fired up. Calgary, you know, I've been traveling for this series, and the atmosphere in Calgary, like in game one when they went up 2-0 NHL record in the first 51 seconds, like, you know, the place was going to explode. But it got pretty quiet when Edmonton scored. And since then, there's been a lot more nervousness in Calgary. And I said at the start of the series, whenever you go in the Battle of Alberta as the favorite, there's just more pressure, right? Like, if Edmonton loses, it would have been disappointing, but their fans could say, yeah, but we weren't the favorite, right? Calgary now is down 3-1, and they were the favorite. Most people picked Calgary to win, right? So it's definitely, I think Calgary, obviously the fans, you know, they're going to try to do their best to bring up the emotion of their team on tomorrow night, so I expect it to be really loud there. But if Edmonton can just get through that first part, you know, then all of a sudden the nerves will set in. And if the building gets quieter, that's obviously a benefit for him.
I saw the video that Sir Valley tweeted of the one guy in a Connor McDavid jersey on top of an Oilers sign, chugging a Mickey of Fireball and then throwing it into the crowd. That was serious energy. I feel like it really captured the vibe of the city right now.
Oh, yeah. There was the Sunday long weekend. Yeah. I'm sure people were loving the Monday game. And even last night, like, though, I'll say what's going to happen here in Edmonton, and I'm not saying they get all the way to the Cup final, but reminiscent of 2006, people will be racking up the younger generation of fans, as they should be, will be out partying, having fun, especially post-COVID. Like,
totally.
Man, if you were a young adult, the last few years would have sucked. Like, I had so much empathy for anybody like 15 to 25. Those are like the greatest years of your life, socializing with your friends, and for 2 years you didn't get to do it. So I think there's a lot of pent-up post-COVID celebration that's going to go on here. So there'll be a lot of people racking up their credit cards and likely a lot of people that are feeling the effects the next few days at work. And, it'll be fun. Like, I'm surprised. I thought the Battle of Alberta was guaranteed to go 6 or 7. I didn't think either team could win it in a short series, but now suddenly the Oilers have a legit shot to end this 1-5. And, I'm a little surprised. Like, I thought Edmonton, like, I thought it'd be a very competitive series, but Edmonton has really controlled much of this series, to be honest. And that's, I think, maybe the least talked about, and I haven't even brought it up yet, the play of the Oilers' six defensemen in this series has probably been the most underappreciated thing in the series. They have been excellent in their own zone, and they're not a great, like, they don't have a rep, they don't have a headman, they don't have a big banger. Darnell Nurse is banged up, so he can't really play as physical as he wants, but Brett Kulak has been really sound. Tyson Barrie, Duncan Keith, Evan Bouchard, Cody Ceci, they've all played very well defensively, just sound. They've got a system that they trust, and they're moving the puck up quite quickly to their forwards. And that, Edmonton just hasn't had to defend very long, and I think that's really been a key. Calgary hasn't been able to have long shifts where they continually just cycle the puck, and that plays into Edmonton's. Because if you get into any sort of transition game with Edmonton, they'll beat you.
Well, we'll see if they can close it out tomorrow night, a chance to advance to the Western Conference Final. Didn't think I'd be saying that back in December when this team couldn't buy a save. But here they are, one game away from the Western Conference Final. Jason, really appreciate taking the time, and enjoy the rest of the series, and hopefully we can talk again down the road.
You betcha, anytime.
All right. There he goes, Jason Greger from TSN 1260 out in Edmonton, host of the Jason Greger Show. He mentioned that there's a 91% chance that teams who are up 3-1 end up winning the playoffs. And the first thing I thought about was, yeah, Maple Leafs were in the exact same situation last year against Montreal. They didn't get it done. They didn't get it done.
No.
Is what it is. Yeah, he was also talking about just like the party and like that. Last couple of years, how you haven't been able to get it done.
My hottest years, AB. And they've been wasted away.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
I didn't have any,
your best years.
I think I have some wrinkles on the side of my eyes now. I didn't have those before the pandemic, and now my supple eye years have been wasted. I'm just kidding. No, it's so true now. You can appreciate things so much more now as a result of the pandemic, I think. So people are partying.